is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon to you. Talking about the fire situation again from a lot of different angles. Kyle Reed from the Douglas Forest Protective Association. Have you actually gotten a day off in the last month?
I actually did. I took yesterday off. It was the first day, full day I've had off in a long time, if you call it a day off. Still did a lot of work from home and answering phone calls, but didn't have to come into Roseburg.
Wow. It's been a busy time, and we went along, and maybe next time we need to knock on wood better. We had gone through so much of the summer with very little fire activity, just little dinky fires here and there. And but then everything changed, obviously, a couple weeks ago. Talk about kind of our current situation with these fires.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, we'd had a great summer up until the evening of September 8th and the morning, or September 7th and the morning of September 8th, and that kind of changed everything for us. And fast forward to today, the Archie Creek fire is at 131,542 acres. And we're at 69% containment with about 900 people working on that fire. So one of the things that's changed since the last time we spoke was the incident management team that is working for the DFPA, Roseburg BLM, the Umpqua National Forest for the Archie Creek fire, has also taken command of the Thielson fire. So that fire right now is at 9,971 acres, and it's also at 69% containment and has just under 400 people assigned to that fire.
So basically the idea there, I'm guessing, was just because these aren't that far apart and because of the stage that both of these fires are at, it kind of maybe allows you to allows one set of folks to be directing resource use in both places.
Exactly. So, you know, both of these fires with the weather we've seen over the last week to 10 days with the cooler temperatures and the precipitation, a lot of great work has happened to get these fires to the state of where they're at. We're not seeing that running and gunning fire activity on either fire now. So that allows one incident management team kind of to take control of both fires, which does free up resources for other incidents across the state or across the country.
So since then, we haven't really had any new fires, have we? I mean, even smaller ones?
We've had a couple small fires since the start of this, nothing major. I think the biggest fire we've had was up north near Putnam Valley, several days after the start of Archie Creek. It was about a 13-acre fire, a lot of mop-up actually to do up there. The fire activity wasn't very intense on that fire when we showed up, but it burned very deep into the roots and stumps and stuff like that. So that was the biggest fire that we've had locally other than these. You know, the last round of lightning, we did pick up, I think it was two lightning fires, one of them up outside of Elkton, less than a quarter acre. I believe that was the Rainy Peak fire. And then there was actually another fire just north of the Archie Creek fire in the Pass Creek area. And with the IA responsibilities of the resources up there working on Archie Creek, they actually took care of that fire for us. But really, those are you know, the fires that stick out in my mind right now. It's been a busy couple weeks. But so far, things have been pretty good for us.
So right now, the crews that are working on both Archie Creek and Thielson, this is kind of seems like sort of the tedious, laborious work that you've that's not as fast paced maybe as the firefighting part, but it's where you've got to really make sure everything's snuffed out.
Yeah, exactly. And this is kind of the boring part of the fire if you're a firefighter, where things aren't running and gunning and you're not chasing stuff. This is the hard work. This is where you're on your hands and knees and you're grubbing around looking for hot spots, looking for smokes. It's dirty, it's hot, it's smoky. You know, it's not the most glamorous job in the world, but this is really important stuff that has to happen to make sure this fire doesn't, or either of these fires, take off again. So yeah, there's a lot of effort right now going around the structures and the containment lines, looking for those smokes, looking for those hot spots, and making sure everything's going to stay in place.
So how do you do that? I mean, do crews just assign to a different area, a particular area, and head a certain direction and see how much progress they can make? or how do you prioritize all that?
Yeah, so there's a couple things that are done. So one of the things that we typically use is infrared or thermal cameras, and those are handheld cameras that we use on the ground. We'll take around the edge of the fire perimeter, and those help us detect hot spots that are hard to see. Maybe they're not producing a lot of smoke or stuff like that, but they're sitting there and smoldering and smoldering and smoldering, and then on a hot day, like we'll see the next couple of days, they'll pop back up. So we're able to go ahead of those crews working, flag those, and then as the crews are coming through, they know where they see the flagging. There's an area they need to really concentrate on. But the other thing that happens is as those crews come through, typically, you know, they're 20-person crews, so they're spaced out in a safe distance, but close enough together they can still all work together, and they're literally at times crawling through this on their hands and knees. They're feeling for heat, they're looking for smoke, and you know, extinguishing all that stuff that could potentially be a problem up to about 100 feet from those containment lines. One of the things that's really important for people to understand is we don't have the capacity or personnel to extinguish every smoke on this fire. So once you get farther in from 100 or 200 feet in from the containment lines, there's going to be stuff that's smoking and smoldering within the interior of this fire for months to come until the winter rains and the snow come and put some of the stuff out. So there will be periods where we may see little smoke columns well interior of the fire. We are monitoring those to make sure that, you know, it's safe, that nothing's going to happen. But we may not be able to commit resources to put every one of those smoke columns out interior that don't threaten the lines.
And as you go along here and you get further into containment, I presume that the number of people working on that slowly lessens. So when you get way, you know, closer to the end of the situation, at least to the immediate situation, you don't have as many resources if something does pop back up.
Yeah, so what happens at this point of the game is typically, you know, things start ramping down. And we've seen that over the last couple of days. We were over 1,000 people just a couple of days ago, and now we're under that slightly. So as resources time out or they're no longer needed, we can look at, you know, maybe there's a piece of equipment that's needed somewhere else on the fire, maybe on the other side or something like that. We can shift resources around, or they are demobed and they become available for other fires, or, you know, some of this equipment's still, you know, local resources that are have other normal day jobs other than firefighting, and they can go back to do that. But as we ramp down, you know, there's still a lot of work out there, not just with the mop up, but also bring in a lot of those supplies back in from the fire line. So the miles and miles and miles of hose out there all have to be brought back in, pressure checked, rolled, cleaned, all that stuff, so they're available for the next incident. And then we've got, you know, pumps and porta tanks and, you know, all those different firefighting tools that we utilize on these incidents to bring back in, check, and make sure that they're ready to go. So there's going to be people around for a while still between mop up and backhaul, but we are going to see those numbers decline in the near future.
I imagine that, you know, you talk about having to go back and retrieve hoses and things like that. Because of the way this fire situation works, sometimes when you move from point A to point B, you're grabbing new gear or whatever. I know that when I was up there 9 days ago, we were up by the Tioga Pedestrian Bridge, and there was a fire hose there. And I don't know if that was just left there in case something started back up, or, I mean, I don't know how you keep track of all this stuff, I guess is my point.
Yeah, so that's the art in itself, and there's, you know, logistic people that have, you know, all this stuff figured out. And, you know, there was a point in time when it was all kind of on paper. Now with the technology that we have, we're seeing a lot more opportunities to utilize that. And this is one of those great areas where, you know, essentially they can scan the different equipment, the pumps and the porta tanks, and they can keep a digital record of where that stuff is at. You know, it can be updated as it's moved around. So if we have a pump that's, you know, off of Rock Creek, for example, that's no longer needed, and they move it to Swiftwater, they can, you know, scan that and update the information in the call log of where it's at now. And so that's helped a lot. But, you know, there's, when you get to a fire this size, there's so much equipment out there that it is kind of tricky of, you know, where is it all at and is it still being used? So a lot of it still is the boots on the ground, keeping track of stuff and helping us know where what's being used and what's not needed anymore.
And I imagine some of this equipment too, I mean, it's not just the fact that you have, you know, 100 feet of hose or whatever, for example, but exactly which agency owns that?
Yeah, so early on in the fire, you know, you're going to have different stuff. You know, DFPA has their fire cache, and you'll have stuff from the local fire departments and the Forest Service and the BLM fire cache. And, you know, there could be stuff from private industry and their fire cache. But pretty early in the game, when things get rolling, we were able to get equipment such as the hose and porta tanks and all that from one of the national fire caches out of the Redmond area. So that side of things, it's, you know, the majority of this will go back to them. So really it's a process of getting it pulled off, cleaned up, and sent back to them.
It's amazing, though, the same kind of technology applied differently that allows people to figure out just where they left their phone works for where did you leave that fire hose anyway?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's a great technology for us, and there's still a lot of stuff to do on the ground, but it definitely helps a lot.
Now, are there issues with the fact that you're in an area that doesn't always have the best cell service in terms of making this technology work, though?
No, so it's kind of a standard program, actually, through ArcGIS and some of that stuff. So they're able to download the different maps and all that information. It uses the GPS off of cell phones and devices to catalog all that. So once you get back into cell service, all that information is updated and you know, presented that way.
Interesting stuff. Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association on Inside Douglas County. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1247, News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249. Lars Larson coming at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association. Kind of talking our way through different aspects of the Archie Creek fire, the Thielson fire. And I want to ask about the fire danger in this area. First thing I noticed when I came in this morning was not for here, where the temperature prognosticators are kind of ramping up a little bit from where they were a few days ago. But for the Rogue Valley, where I saw like a fire weather watch starting, I think, tomorrow, triple digits and some fire potential. What do you know about that?
Yeah, so there is, last I saw, a red flag warning in effect for areas to the south and possibly to the east of us. Nothing on DFPA's protected or the Umpqua National Forest that I was able to find. But again, that's going to be for those hot conditions and kind of those east wind type events. You know, talking to our neighbors at the Coos Forest Protective Association this morning, they were already seeing some of those really low humidities early this morning down in the Gold Beach, Brookings area. Kind of with that Chetco effect. But, you know, here locally, we are, you know, forecasted to see temperatures warm up throughout most of this work week. And at least today, the possibility of some east winds again. So we're not really expecting those east winds to be as strong as what they were during this initial event. But there is the possibility for those to develop this afternoon over this evening.
And I just pulled it up here from the Weather Service in Medford for Eastern Rogue Valley, Siskiyou, Southern Oregon Cascades. Red flag warning actually in effect already until 10 a.m. tomorrow for east winds. As you mentioned, poor overnight recovery, strong gusty winds, 30 miles an hour, maybe 40 on the ridges. It's not exactly what we had a couple weeks ago, but it's not good.
No, it's not great. You know, the one saving grace, at least for us up here, is we did get a fair amount of moisture over, you know, the last 10 days or so. You know, the Rogue Valley didn't get hardly anything compared to what we got. That doesn't mean we're not going to see an increase in fire danger. You know, we're watching this closely, and there is a good possibility we'll be increasing our fire danger in the coming days kind of to account for this. But as of right now, DFPA remains in a low fire danger in an IFPL of 1. But again, please stay current with that information. It'll be shared and posted on our social media websites, our information line 672-0379. So if you're going to be working around your house or recreating, make sure you're current with those fire restrictions.
And we went from extreme to high to moderate to low in just a few days.
Yeah, and you know, that really has a lot to do with the weather that we received. We received a good shot of moisture, and the temperatures really dropped off, and then we had another round of moisture come through. So the nice thing is, you know, those light flashy fuels are very receptive to that moisture while it's there. But within a couple hours of that rain being gone, that moisture or the benefit of that moisture dries out. So we'll see those light flashy fuels burn again, obviously. The one thing I noticed the last couple days driving around is we're really starting to see some green shoots pop up from the moisture and the sunshine. So that's going to help us out a little bit, having some more live fuel moisture and some of that stuff. But the long term with those larger fuels, it takes a lot longer, hundreds or thousands of hours, for that moisture to really absorb into those larger diameter fuels to make a difference in that. So that's, you know, that's something else that we're watching as well.
Now, we've gone up temperature-wise about 7 degrees in the last 45 minutes, but we're still 20 degrees under the projected high, so we might get there, we might not. But with 3 days in a row forecast to be in the 90s, that brings the whole area of caution back into play.
Yeah, it does. You know, not only for new fire starts, but also for the existing fires. You know, so again, for new fire starts, please stay current with the fire restrictions and the fire dangers that may change over the coming days. Good possibility it will. You know, we're really watching that closely. The nice thing, I guess, with the weather somewhat with the Archie and Thielson fires is this will give us an idea how things are really looking. We've spent a lot of time, like I mentioned earlier in the show, with, you know, crews mopping up and the IR cameras, but this is really going to be a pretty good test for those lines. We're feeling really confident in how things are looking, but until you get this opportunity to really test it, you really don't know where you're at.
What are you seeing on the long range forecast for the Umpqua Valley looking ahead over the next few weeks?
So, you know, talking to the meteorologist on the fire this morning at our briefing, he's not really seeing anything for moisture out at least through the end of next week. And, you know, obviously as you get out farther, it is kind of hard to project on where things are going to pan out. When you look at some of the models from the National Weather Service for, you know, the 1 and 3 month outlook, you know, they're calling for above normal temperatures, but they are also calling for above normal precipitation for most of the Pacific Northwest. So, you know, again, that is kind of hard to forecast that far out, but we're definitely keeping an eye on, you know, what's happening. You know, this time of year, we typically get a lot of questions on, you know, when does fire season end? And that all ties back into the fuels conditions and the weather forecasts. You know, typically an average end date for us is, you know, around the middle part of October, but it really depends on when those fall and seasonal rains return to the area.
And for the last minute or so here on Inside Douglas County, what should people be doing as we kind of go into fall? Some people start to not spend as much time working on their property or yard. Is that going to be an issue?
Well, the biggest thing, I think we talked about this last time as well, is we've seen a pretty good spike in illegal debris burn since that last shot of rain. So again, please don't be burning anything. Fire season is still in effect. You know, if you're worried about the pile getting wet, you know, cover it with a sheet of plastic or a tarp. You know, our phones were going off the hooks yesterday with people burning. I think there was an individual trying to burn out a beehive as well that caught a tree on fire, and just not good things yesterday. So please don't do any burning until fire season ends. That's probably going to be the biggest thing going forward, is just trying to curb that.
And give folks your website again.
Yeah, so dfpa.net. We're also on the Facebook. Our information line, 672-0379, has the fire danger and all those restrictions listed and updated as they change.
Fire Prevention Officer Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me again.
1257 News Radio, 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.